And that will be my Chinese lesson for the day. Add a description. I'm going to turn the this thing around because does it really matter? Oh, it would be funny if they did live from slow boat my Dian in Beijing. And the only other thing I'm going to do is I'm going to set this to DND. So none of that. All right, done, done. Folks, this is me being live after a week of work. There we go. It's actually working, finally. I'm not sure what to say. I think the audio levels are okay on this one. Hopefully it works out because these headphones aren't the best. I'm actually shooting this live today at the pub. I wasn't going to make it home before I wanted or needed a beer. And so as a result, I just came here. I'm actually at the Slow Boat Brewery, brew pub, here on Mai Zedian Street in Beijing. I'll give you a look around. This is one of the newer ones that opened up. This guy is part of the guys who runs the place. And yeah, so for those of you watching the video, you'll see it. For those of you listening to the podcast, I'll post pictures on the website, show notes and whatnot. So that's your that's what a brew pub looks like here in Beijing. Just off work, so I'm still in my work clothes. Just going to check these levels, make sure they're still okay. Yeah, sounds okay. But yeah, we're going live here on Friday afternoon. It is, what is it? It's August 21st already, 2020. And Ganbei to you folks out there. Back in, I know it's an early morning show for Winnipeg. It's an early evening show for me here in Beijing. I am drinking, what am I having today? Number 15, it's the Bombilla Yerba Mate Hazy IPA. So that's what, that's going to be my first beer. I don't think I'm going to be having, I might have a second one of these, but I'm not sure how many beers I'm going to be having today. I don't need to be drinking quite a bit, but after a week of this, basically our company's gone pretty much digital, and so now instead of doing meeting a lot of these clients face-to-face, it's now over the computer. Basically, it's Zoom meetings all day, and we have these headphones that go onto our head, and they are insanely, although they're comfortable enough to wear for a little bit of time, when you have to wear them for 7 hours a day, that's when things get really aggravating. And yeah, they give me a headache. So I couldn't wait to get out, basically. But you got to stick around and wait for more clients to show up and do your job, basically, right? So this got me through it, though. I'm not going to lie. This there's another one that they have. It's called, they had the Octa Hazy they had before. I don't see it on the menu anymore. I'll give you a look at the menu. This is what I'm referring to, and this is what I'm looking at. So this menu has all of the beers that they currently have on tap. You can see 10, 5, 10, 15, 16, 17. And right now is happy hour, as you can see. So it's 10 kwai off. It just means that instead of me paying the 45 kwai, it's going to be 35 kwai, which is good because then I can get two. And we are just before paycheck day, before paycheck week. So I am trying to not spend so much, especially since I have rent coming up due at the end of the week or end of the month. And that's, don't want to be spending too much. I don't want to be wasting too much of my money on alcohol. I mean, there's no real nutritional value of alcohol anyway. I know people make the argument of that it can be good for you and whatnot, but honestly, your body doesn't use it for anything. There's no nutritional value. I mean, when you have a pint, it's nothing but carbohydrates. It's all you. It's, sure, it's a grain, but there's alcohol, which is gonna leach water from your body, and there's no other nutrients. There's no nutrients. That's the word. There's no other proteins, fats. It's just carbohydrates, and your body doesn't really need them for energy at all. Now, mentally speaking, psychologically speaking, it might be worth having a beer or two beers or whatever. Today, I was actually planning on having a few more. I'm not gonna lie. Because doing 5 days of work, I am not used to. I've had 6 to 7 months off. I'm not working. And now I gotta do 5 days in a row, and my head's splitting. But this actually brings me to one of the things that I just posted on my website at stevensersky.com, is that I've recently stepped up my Chinese game. So I'm studying, as you know, I am studying Chinese while I'm working at the same time. So I'm not a student, but I'm also not concentrating on it full time. So now what I'm planning on doing actually is backing off of my work and then spending more time actually studying on studying my Chinese. So what I'm going to do is go down to three or four days of work a week, and then on the other days I'll be spending hopefully 3 to 4 hours a day just working on my Chinese. And on my website you'll see there's a whole blog post called "It's Stepping Up to HSK5. So I have hit the HSK5 level, which basically means that I'm working on knowing about 2,500 words and characters in Mandarin Chinese, in simplified Mandarin Chinese. By the end of this, when I finish these books, what I should be able to do is have a decent conversation with someone about everyday topics, and then more specialized topics as well. But I should also be able to read the newspaper with little effort. And you'll know that from my post so far that it has been some effort for me to be able to actually read the newspaper. And I've posted pictures of reading the newspaper. It's getting easier. And one of the things I've noticed with reading, I haven't really noticed this with English newspapers. Maybe it is, but you can tell me, leave a comment. But when you read a newspaper, do they tend to use the same words over and over again? And I don't mean words like, I guess even including words such as like the, is, are, you know, all your verbs and all those little particles that English has in them. But in Chinese, it seems that the articles have chunks of words that are used over and over and over again throughout the whole article. So once you learn up, once you see and look up those two or three words or characters that they use over and over again, you can basically read the whole article and understand what it's about. I don't think this is the same in English, but I might be wrong in this case. So this is something, I haven't read an English newspaper in a while. I've been reading online blogs though, so I guess I should have noticed, but I've noticed that with Chinese newspapers and the finance magazines that I'm reading, those ones tend to use the same characters. Kind of like what I'm doing right now, I'm just repeating the same thing over and over again. So you don't need to have a large vocabulary in order to understand an article, although the articles are intimidating because there are lots of words. I've also noticed that with Chinese newspapers, there are lots of words. Like the articles are mostly text, similar to the Wall Street Journal or to the New York Times, where there's just a lot of text, but there are pictures every now and then, but primarily there's a lot of text to take in. But again, using the same characters. So if you are reading an article, right now it takes me about 15 to 20 minutes to read, 500 words, 700 words, maybe a few more. I don't know how many more. Maybe it's 1,000 characters. I don't know. I'm terrible at guessing how many words. Chinese articles don't have spaces in them. So when you look at an English article, you'll see all the spaces, right? But all the Chinese characters are just put together. And you know when a word ends, usually because there's another stop word like "d," and a draw it. Oh, I can't draw it backwards. And there's another part of the character. Oh, shoot, I forgot it. But when you see those stop words, or like another word like "xia," or even "shang," those will be all sort of signaling change of word, usually, not all the time. Same with dang or danshi, or those little connectives. So in that case, all the words are put together and you sort of have to know where they actually end in order to actually understand it. Kind of like how Latin used to be written back in the day, back in the good old day. Same with ancient Greek. All those ancient languages were all written just one sentence, one line. There was no spaces at all, you know, to conserve space. I don't know why they do it in Chinese. It's just a feature of the language. But with that, so it is getting easier to read the newspapers and the magazines. By the end of the HSK5 books, I should be able to have no problem reading those. But also my speed should be a lot quicker. Right now it takes me a long time. And as I mentioned in the blog post on my website, the HSK 5 test is a lot about speed reading, basically. That you have to, it's not so much the listening that's going to be quicker, it's going to be the reading portion. There's going to be blocks of text that you have to be able to read quickly, and then when you read the question and the answer is given to you, because it's multiple choice, you have to be able to know what they're talking about. It's not as simple as just matching up the characters in the answers with certain chunks of the text, which is what, you know, it's a test-taking strategy, and I've taught my own students to do that. Look for the keywords, right? They might give you part of the keyword, but they won't give you the whole thing. So that is going to be a bit more of a challenge for me going into HSK-5. The other part about the HSK-5 test that I need to prepare for is the writing section. And this is actually something I'm a little bit more excited to be working on. And it's not something that is common for a lot of, dare I say it, foreigners. But it's more accurately not as many, what would you call, Chinese studying people. Chinese students, Chinese language students. I'm just going to adjust this one more time. So on the podcast, you're going to hear a bit of a click here. There we go. Okay. So with the writing, a lot of people actually don't focus on the writing when they are doing Chinese studies. Usually the HSK tests focus mainly on reading and listening. And then also in the upper levels, it's writing, but there's no speaking. So what's with HSK-5 is that the writing gets a lot harder. And you're expected to look at a picture and be able to write a grammatically correct sentence with Chinese characters. Now, you don't actually have to write with your hand. You can use a keyboard because they are computer-based tests now. But I am looking, in talking to the other people that I know that are studying Chinese, a lot of them do not write the characters. They don't spend any time really focusing on developing their written Chinese skills, which is what I'm doing. That's what I'm trying to do the most. Is that I do want to develop that sort of proficiency in being able to actually write an essay in the Chinese language. Now, it doesn't have to be a professional essay by any means. It could be, but what I want to happen as a result is to be able to write something that I could then give to an editor, then I could give to someone else, and they could edit it for clarity, for punctuation, not just punctuation, but grammar, for clarifying what's a good set of words in the Chinese language and what would not be said in the Chinese language, which is similar to what I do as an English proofreader when the opportunity arises. And as English teachers would be familiar with this, anybody who's ever learned a second language would be familiar with, like, you're good enough to get to speak or to be functional, but you might not be perfect. And that's all I'm looking for, is functionality in Chinese writing. I'm functional as a Chinese speaker, although it sounds rough and everyone says that my grammar is terrible. I don't care. I can still communicate what I need in most occasions. Sometimes I don't understand what they're saying. But in terms of stepping up to writing, I do want to be able to hand write in Chinese. So the goal by the end of December is to be able to write about, well, the textbooks say 100 characters, 100 zi, yi bai zi. And ibaitsu, I think, 100 words. And so that's going to be the goal for end of December. And that would hopefully enable me to develop a short descriptive paragraph that is used during the actual test. So that's the goal, 100 characters, 100 words that I'm actually able to handwrite. Now, again, with the test being computer-based, computer-delivered, shouldn't be as difficult. So the focus was going to be mostly on grammar, and then being able to remember that I get the right character. And this has happened before where my Chinese teacher has says, like, you have the pinyin right, but you do not have the character right. If you were to read it, it would be, someone could understand what you're saying. But if they're reading it, they would go, okay, I know what the sound is, but your character is wrong. That character has a different meaning. So that's what I'm looking to do. So again, going back, getting into back to the work subject, I'm scaling back on my work 3 days a week, and now I'm going to be studying on my off days 3 to 4 hours a day, maybe 5 hours a day, and hopefully becoming a lot more proficient in the Chinese language. Now, there's two things about that some people have been asking me. Number one is, like, well, why the big push? And number two, why am I even studying the Chinese language? The big push right now is actually because as I hit year 3 of this job, year 4, I can't remember how many. It's 2017 I started, so I'm going into my fourth contract, and I can see already where the sort of the writing's on the wall in terms of the longevity of this job, or and not just this job, but like in terms of this type of work. I think I'm looking to change at some point down the line, sooner than later, but who knows. And Mandarin Chinese is going to be at least one more tool in that toolbox. It's also a chance for me to finally master a language in the environment that it's used. So that's been a goal of mine ever since I left Korea 10 years ago. That I sort of feel bad that I never stayed in Korea, South Korea, long enough to really learn much more of the language that I could become proficient in it. And so since then, I've sort of always had it in my mind that if I had the chance again, I would become proficient in a second language. And traveling as an English teacher is kind of difficult sometimes. So number two, in terms of why am I sort of focusing mostly on this Chinese, the other aspect of Chinese that it's more of a challenge to learn a different character system, a different alphabet. It's something I've never done before. Chinese is the hardest language I've ever learned, and I've learned French and Ukrainian back in elementary school and whatnot, Latin, Greek, ancient Greek in university, studied a bit of Korean, a bit of Polish as well, not so much Polish, my Polish is terrible, and then there's Russian, but I mean Russian is very similar to Ukrainian anyway, so however many languages that is, five or six, Mandarin Chinese is my fifth or sixth language already that I've studied, okay, again, that I've studied, so I am aiming for proficiency. That I'll be able to take with me outside of the country. Do I plan on living in China for the rest of my life? No. Certainly, I hope not Beijing, as even now I've sort of noticed that Beijing has sort of stepped down in terms of its livability. And it's very difficult to sort of explain what exactly has happened. There's a lot of political stuff that goes on. And if you read anything in the news about China, it's usually negative. And life isn't that negative here, but it is a lot more cautious, I would say. Now, one thing that did happen a couple of months ago, about 6 to 8 weeks ago, was that you'll remember, I'm here at Slowboat Brew Pub. So cheers to y'all, to you two that are watching so far, and everybody else is joining. I mentioned that the craft beer scene has sort of kept me in Beijing for a long time, or at least it was one of the things that helped keep me here. I noticed that about 6 to 8 weeks ago, about 2 months ago, as work was sort of rumored to be starting again, when I went to one of the pubs and I was having, you know, these delicious IPAs that I love so much, that the same flavor wasn't there. And I'm not sure if that is because they changed the brewing process, maybe because of the coronavirus lockdown, they couldn't get the same ingredients. But I noticed that there wasn't as much of a desire to even come to these places anymore and try out the new beers. I mean, maybe once a month, once in a while, I'll come to these places, but I'm not here once a week or even twice a week, which I used to do back in the last few years. So with that change, and if that's changing, I'm noticing that it might be time to start just thinking about some other options. If not China, where else? And I've written about this before on my blog a couple of months ago. Where else could I go? I mentioned the Middle East, but the Middle East doesn't have a big drinking culture, which is fine. And I'm starting to think that, you know what, it might be a good idea if I did learn how not to drink so much. And that if I ever did drink, it would be, you know, sort of at home, one or two, and then that's it. So that is an idea. That it might be that the universe is telling me that. I don't know. Right now I'm having a pint at the brew pub. So that's good. So we'll see. In terms of learning Chinese, that is the goal for the next 4 months. September, October, November, December. That's 4 months away that I can finish these HSK5 books. To which one of my colleagues said, good luck, that would be impressive. And I'm like, yeah, it would be, but I don't think it's difficult. So far, as I've gone through the books, reading has gotten a lot easier. As I mentioned, I was reading Chinese newspapers before and magazines. I've noticed, though, that the textbooks that I'm using are a lot easier to read than before. So I'm very happy with that development in my Chinese abilities. And the other great thing is that the words are sticking a lot more. I'm not having to look up the same word over and over again. There are some words that I just can't remember because they either look like a different character, and it's just a bit more difficult for me to disassociate them, what I have in my mind and what it actually is. But it's sticking a lot easier. It's getting easier to read. And so I think with HSK5, the fifth level, it's going to be more about the grammar rather than vocabulary. Although vocabulary is going to be a huge part of it, obviously. So that's the next step. The one thing I didn't mention yet is that what I do plan on doing with the Chinese characters this time around, you'll note, and I talk about this in my blog post on my website, that at HSK3 and HSK4, I was writing out all the characters like 25 times in a notebook. Well, this time, I'm actually looking to change that, and instead, I'm going to create an audio file, and I'll probably publish this on my website, and I'll let people download it, because this is, I didn't do them. I have yet to figure out if I'm going to actually make the recordings, or if I'm just going to use the recordings that I have already and modify them for my needs. But I'm going to create an audio file that I am able to listen to slowly, and then I'm going to write down the character, and that's going to test my ability to hear the character and then see the character in my mind and be able to write it down on a piece of paper. So again, aiming for the proficiency, the writing proficiently in the Chinese language. So that's basically the big goal that I have for the rest of the year. The other blog post that I've published recently, just last week, was a description of what it's like to travel now in China. I've only made one business trip. I don't know what I did wrong, but the company has just put me here in Beijing and stuck me in the office, and I hate it. But given the choice of sitting in an airport for 6 hours waiting for a flight, or you know, being home in 30 minutes, maybe being here in Beijing at home in 30 minutes is not such a bad idea. But that blog post is called Green Means Go, what it's like to traveling after COVID-19 or traveling after coronavirus. And in that blog post, I go through some of the precautions, security measures, some of the safety measures that are now in place as you travel. And I encourage you to take a look at that, because I think it really is a sign of the times and whether or not these things sort of stay in place, and for how long they stay in place, remains to be seen. But in terms of, there's a lot of talk about, there used to be a lot of talk about internet privacy and, you know, sort of having secure connections. Why does Google have to store your searches? You know, what's your computer spying on you? And now, with this recent health crisis, the coronavirus outbreak, what we're seeing now in China is that you do have to download an app, you have to register with your passport, your phone number, you have to take a picture of you with the passport, and you have to make sure that you haven't, and you have to declare if you've ever been in one of the places that are considered high risk by the government. And the government publishes these things, of course. But if you don't declare that, you can get into trouble. Now, what trouble, I don't know. But I know that a couple months ago, it was the Xinfadi market, Shichang, in west part of Beijing, southwest part of Beijing. And if you didn't declare that you had been to that market, then I don't know how they would find you, but they might have found you, and that would have been a big mistake for you to do. At least you probably would have had a talking to, or you might have been visited, and you know, nucleic acid test or quarantine, who knows? I mean, safety measures in place, of course. So what's happened now is that in the blog post I discuss, there are four main apps that you need. You need your Beijing or your city specific. Then you need a national. And then you need your other provincial. And then we also need a company. And a lot of companies have their own, or a lot of buildings. Like, so if you go to a specific office building, every time you go there, you need to scan the company, either the company or the building QR code, and then they will let you in. So with all four of those apps, with all four of those functions, what you have to get is a green arrow. And I'd show it to you right now, but I'm using my cell phone at the moment, so I can't do it at the moment. But on my website, I have several pictures of what that green arrow or the green QR code looks like. If you don't get a green code, it means you can't enter. Now, do you get quarantined? Do you get tested right away? I don't know. Along the way, the entire time, at every entrance, everywhere now in China and anywhere, you have to get your temperature tested. So they have this little gun this little temperature gun that they put onto your hand, and they take your temperature, and you have to write down your temperature, your phone number, your name. Sometimes you have to write down your passport information, but sometimes you don't. And with that, in addition to scanning the QR code and showing that you haven't been anywhere that's considered a high-risk area. Now, in terms of high-risk areas, I wonder if what would happen is that when you scan that app and it says you've been to this country or this city, they might detect if you've been to this part that's been considered high risk. It'll give you a red arrow, and then you're not allowed to enter that premises, enter that area. So this is one of the things that could happen to you. I'm not sure if they, you know, club you upside the back of the head and throw you into a white van and drive you off to quarantine, but you never know. Maybe. I haven't seen it happen. I haven't heard about it happening, but again, you don't hear about a lot of things in this country, so who knows? So the blog post does go into a little bit more depth of what exactly has happened to our travel experience here in China. And again, going back to that tracking, is it such a bad thing to be tracked all the time for our own health? Using the QR codes, using, you know, government proclamations, or using any sort of public news agencies to disseminate the information, saying, like, listen, these are high-risk areas, don't go there. If you've been there, please go get tested. And then having a record of that, just in case something, you know, we need to check up on you or something. Is this a bad thing? I don't know. And I've praised China's efforts to crush the coronavirus outbreak that's happened, and I see that it's still a massive problem in the West, specifically in the United States and parts of Europe as well. Surprisingly, no one's talking about the Southern Hemisphere yet. Australia, I'm not even sure what the counts are. Brazil was a big outbreak, actually. But Argentina, I don't know. What about parts of Africa as well? How are those places going? I haven't looked, so I'm not entirely sure of the numbers. Honestly, I stopped looking at the numbers. I stopped caring, mainly because I'm not going anywhere else. I'm sitting here in Beijing, and this is all I'm going to be doing. So unless I have to leave, which I don't think I will, there's really no point in me paying attention too much to what the numbers are saying. Some people have sort of been making fun of the United States for the numbers that are going up and the big mask debate that's going on there, to which I normally respond. I'm like, yes, it is such a big deal in the United States. Funny, given that it is an election year, which I no doubt someone out there is going to hear that and be offended and say, well, that's not why, you don't understand, it's a big problem, this thing actually kills. I'm like, yes, you're absolutely right. But if this didn't happen in an election year where there's a very unpopular Republican president in the United States White House, would this have been such a big deal? Kind of makes you wonder. So with the two blog posts I've put up so far in the last week, the HSK5 one, which details my Chinese studies so far, and then also the traveling through China, that one is, I don't know, about 1200 words, and it's a good few more pictures. I have a few pictures of the Jinan West train station, which is interesting to look at, just how it's all set up. That when we entered the actual train station, when we left the train, got off the platform, exited the ticketed area, we had to scan the QR code, the Shandong province QR code, and make sure that we got a green one. Now, what would happen if we didn't get a green one? No idea. So then again, at the hotel, we had to scan more QR codes, temperature taken, passports photocopied, which is pretty much typical to do at all hotels anyway. And then what was the other thing we had to do? They had to take a picture of the green QR codes and the green arrows. They had to have a record of that as well. Other than that, buffets were still open. I didn't take a picture of the buffet. I meant to do that, actually, in Jinan Hotel. We stayed at the Hyatt, and one of the Hyatts, I can't remember which one. And that one, yeah, they had a buffet just as normal. The only thing different was that people were wearing masks. That was the only big difference with any sort of the actual day-to-day operations of the hotel. Other than that, same old gym was open. They were cleaning it more, which is great to see, although sometimes you wondered how well they were cleaning it. In general, I have seen people are cleaning things a lot better. people themselves are washing their hands a lot more and a lot more thoroughly as well, which is also good to see. So you see that the whole level of hygiene, the whole level of cleanliness has gone up. Toilets are even taken better care of now. There's soap, not always hot water, not such a big deal, but the soap part is a pretty important piece that's been sort of added and made sure that it's still there. I mentioned a couple months ago, that you could usually smell the chlorine or the disinfectant in some of the wash buckets that they have. You don't smell that anymore, and you don't see as many things being cleaned, but in general you do see things like the floors being mopped a little bit more. The handles of doors aren't being cleaned very well, though. And you could say that, well, Steve, why don't you do that? Well, one of the other things that's happened since this whole thing started is that people are now using keys or Kleenexes to touch different surfaces. And then a lot of them have, the hand gel, that alcohol hand gel that they use. I have two bottles with me, and every time I use one of the share bikes, which is quite often, every day, basically, I have this alcohol hand gel, which I was using beforehand. It's not such a big change to my own life using the alcohol gels, because I was grossed out by these things before anyway. It didn't matter. It's just I use it more often and a little bit more intentionally now than I did a couple months ago. So those are two blog posts so far. There's another blog post that I am working on right now, and I alluded to it last week, which is a bit more of a somber blog post. It will be titled "Life is Precious," and this actually comes on the back of, or this follows, last week. At the end of last week, Friday night here, Friday morning in Winnipeg, a friend messaged me, a close friend in Winnipeg, messaged me and told me that his mom had passed away. And this was a big impact, actually, because when I first saw it, when I saw mom passed away, I thought it was my own mom, first of all. Then I saw the name, I'm like, wait a minute, that's not my name. So no one in my family has sent me this message. And then I realized that it was his mother who had passed away. So my condolences to his family. And that, her death, is after 2 weeks ago a colleague had passed away as well. He was actually found dead in Mexico. And I posted about him as well, and he was a young guy. Jackson Turner was his name, because he was actually one of our famous colleagues, because he was a rapper. He was a lyrical genius, lyrical gangster that had a life outside of the job. And he was found in a swimming pool in Mexico. Not sure of the whole story. But whatever happened, whether it was by accident or who knows. But he passed away at a very young age. And so those two deaths. And then I think it was last year. Yeah, it was about a year and a half ago that one of my cousins also passed away. And she was only 51. She died of stomach cancer. So one of the sad things, and this is what I want to talk about in the blog post that I have coming up, is that one of the sad things about growing up, aside from taxes and saving money, is the reality that you are more aware of how fragile you are, of how fragile your life is, and that our bodies are so fragile, and that you are more aware of when people pass away. And these people, the true meaning of forever, in my opinion, there's two times when you feel that the most, not so much and you understand it, but that you see it happen. The two times are when someone passes away, which is my father passed away a couple of years ago. That was the first time I'd ever actually seen this sort of happen. But then also I would think birth as well. When you have a child, that's another meaning of forever, that you sort of see time from both ends, and it just expands. The whole death is so finite, and then so is birth, because when you have a child, and I don't have children, but I can only imagine that when you have a child, the whole goal, I mean, being a parent, is that you outlive them and that you're able to see your grandchildren, and that you're the one to go first. So that, I mean, I don't know, you tell me if I'm wrong, But yeah, those two circumstances, that's when you sort of see forever, the word forever, really take hold and become real for the first time, or at least in life. So that blog post, I've actually been thinking about this for a long time. I haven't written it down yet, mainly because it is sort of a heavy subject and I want to get it right. And I'm not gonna lie, every time I hear someone passing away, I sort of remind myself of just how precious life is and that you do have to do some of the things, if not all of the things, but at least some of the things that you want to do in life and stop thinking, I can't do that because. It's not that you can't do that. It's maybe that you can't do it right now, but you can work towards it. So whether or not it's, you know, getting in shape, which is your common one, getting a six-pack, another common male desire, or a bikini body for women. But then non-physical, you know, I want to read War and Peace. So, you know, maybe just get the audiobook. I want to travel, which is difficult now, given our circumstances, but not altogether impossible. And these aren't going to last forever, these circumstances, we hope. So things like that, where you want to experience some things, you want to go do, you want to go try these things, you know what, start researching them, look into them. I have touched a little bit on these subjects on my previous blog posts. Notably, there's two of them, I think. There's the mid-year review, and then also the If This Is a Depression, which I posted near the beginning of the coronavirus when I just started my podcast. And just being able to start picking away at some of those things that you want to try, one of those, maybe it's books that you want to read or people you want to meet or places you want to go, things you want to accomplish. Maybe it's just simply having a garden out in your backyard or in your house, having more green plants. These are all things that you can start picking away at. And for parents, I don't know, being less stressed with your kids, good luck. I hear stories from people who have parents. And yeah, I made a post on Twitter a couple days ago about I didn't understand how someone could have a podcast and work a full-time job, let alone if they could have a podcast, have a full-time job, work out, and then have and also take care of kids. Don't get it. It's beyond me. This is something that eventually maybe I'll have to learn how to do, but right now I don't have to just yet. Who knows? My life is basically my job and my podcast and working out. So I got three of them. The fourth one's yet to arrive. Not saying that there is anyone in the pipeline for children. So just no rumors just yet. But who knows? I'm not against the idea, and certainly is. Something that I'm not against. And speaking of which, one of my cousins actually just got married last week or 2 weeks ago. So congratulations to them. Congratulations, Ariel and her husband. And so they're starting that journey together. So yeah, life is precious. Do what you can. Do more than what you think you can is probably the main message that I'm trying to convey with that. But I encourage you, head to my website, stevensirsky.com. I've got two new blog posts up so far. Green Means Go, all about traveling in China post-COVID. And then also HSK, stepping up to HSK5, which is my Chinese language learning journey. I haven't published a podcast in a while because getting back into work mode, my scheduling has been thrown off. And as you can see, that I am trying actually to do this live recording just to see if it's actually going to work out. My one concern is actually the music in the background, whether it's going to be interfering with the actual podcast experience. But I think it's kind of neat having a live episode rather than having a dead studio sound all the time, that very blocked studio sound. That is, it has its place, but I think, I don't know, maybe my podcast can be both. And I certainly have another idea that I'm not willing to share just yet. It's there, and I do want to create it because I see a lot of the other podcasts. They're not calling themselves podcasts. They call themselves experiences. So like the Joe Rogan Experience is another one where it's like a show. So it's not a podcast. I called mine the Steven Sirsky Podcast because it was just the easiest name I could come up with, simplest name. And I'm going to continue with it. Then I started thinking, it should be an experience, you know, in case it becomes like a video or a cartoon, which is also a popular thing these days, or something else. But that gets me thinking, like, it doesn't just have to be a podcast. It could actually be something else. And you can see now you can hear that the crowds are getting a little bit bigger. The bar is not very full right now. It's about, 4:30 at the moment? 5:30, actually. So, yeah, the post-work crew will be showing up. None of my colleagues are here just yet. The one guy who used to come here quite a bit has quit and gone back to, where do they speak Welsh? Wales? Yes. Or is he from somewhere else? I can't remember. But he's gone, so I don't see him at the bar anymore. But yeah, so I haven't been publishing very much with the podcast. I will get this down. I'm trying these live recordings just to see how they turn out. And yeah, I do have one other idea for not so much a podcast, but an audio experience, if you will, that should be will be a lot different. It won't be the same. It won't be yakety, 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 this podcast is. Going from that, I do have a couple more guests lined up. I'm excited that there's going to be some from Winnipeg. There's going to be some from here in China. But those are going to be coming up in the next couple of weeks. All right, the music's getting too loud. And yeah, I don't really want to have a podcast or an audio file that's being crowded up by someone else's music. Righto, thank you for paying attention. Thank you for joining me today. We will talk again. StephenSirsky.com is my website. I'll post the audio file shortly, probably over the weekend. And we'll talk again. All right, have a good one. Bye-bye.